If you got your Bibles, you'll want to turn to Matthew chapter 5. Over the last several weeks, we've been in a sermon series about respectable, okay sins that aren't okay. I thought we would start out this morning with a little bit of self-confession, not confession, participation. How about that? Is that better? Self-participation. Group participation this morning. How many of you, in the last 30 days, have been frustrated about something? Okay. How many of you in the last 30 days have just flat been angry about something? Something's just really made you mad. All right. Now, of those of you that didn't vote, how many of you pled the fifth right there? Several of you. I see a few of you that are at least honest enough to go, hey, I'm not incriminating myself before I know where you're going. When you think in terms of anger, certainly there's frustration and then there's anger. There's different stages of it as it goes. How many of you that have experienced that anger in the last 30 days, how many of you are those people that I would say are like me? I don't kind of, in a scale of 1 to 10 of anger, I don't really have like a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9. I'm like a 1 or I'm a 10. How many of you are like that? Okay, I see a few of you out there. How many of you are those people that you start at 1 and then you go to 1.5 and then you go to 2 and then you go to 2.3 and you just kind of simmer until you've gotten to the place that, hey, we're up here about 9.5. How many of you are the simmerers? How many of you are like the crock pot of anger? Okay, now how many of you, again, are the dynamites of anger? All right, that way I kind of know who my crowd is this morning. But I think anger is one of those sins that so many times we try to manage. And there certainly is a side of anger that the scriptures say, be angry and sin not. There certainly is a side of anger that fits. But for most of us, that's not the anger we struggle with. We struggle with this anger that we try to manage it as we go throughout our day. And I want you to look in Matthew chapter 5. By the way, before we read, how many of you, I know I was kind of late yesterday, but how many of you got your homework assignment? A few of you are the late nighters. That was a lot of reading starting at 8 o'clock last night when I finally got it out there and got a break from referee and basketball games yesterday. But we're going to talk a little bit this morning. If you didn't get the assignment, you should go back this afternoon. You have plenty of time. From Genesis 37, I believe it was, to Genesis 45 is the story of Joseph in the scripture. Spectacular story. We're going to talk about it a little bit this morning. And then in Genesis 4, there's a story of a guy named Cain. Adam and Eve's son, Cain. It's just about a half, maybe 15 or 20 verses, the story of Cain. And in both of those stories, you see where anger was certainly a place where it could have played a role. And in one of them, it played a major role in a negative way. And in one of them, it played a major role, but he managed it well in the sense that he relied on love. And you get to see how so many things in Joseph's life came out that way. But Matthew chapter 5, verse 21. This is in the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus preaches, and it's interesting if you look back at the beginning as the Sermon on the Mount starts in Matthew chapter 5. It's interesting that Jesus starts out with the Beatitudes, and most of us are pretty familiar with the Beatitudes, and then Jesus talks about the part where he says that we as believers are supposed to be salt and light, and then he talks about the part where he came to fulfill the law, all the things from the Old Testament prophets that he came to fulfill, and then he moves right in to this. I think it's interesting that Jesus talked about the reason that he came was to fulfill the law. He talked about salt and light, and he gave the Beatitudes that are also important, and then he went right straight to anger in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, you have heard it said that it was said to our ancestors, do not murder, and whoever murders will be subject to the judgment. But I tell you, everyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment, and whoever says to his brother, fool, will be subject to the Sanhedrin, but whoever says, you moron, will be subject to hellfire. So if you're offering your gift at the altar or on the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled with your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Reach a settlement quickly with your adversary while you're on the way with him, or your adversary will hand you over to the judge to the officer, and you will be thrown into prison. I assure you, you will never get out of there until you have paid the last penny. Interesting verses. And I want us to look at those in a couple of different sections this morning. And the first one is in verses 21 and the first part of verse 22. When I think of anger and the idea that anger is subject to judgment. It says, you have heard that it was said to your ancestors, do not murder, and whoever murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you, everyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. When you think in these terms, Jesus quotes the Ten Commandments to them, and you know that they would have all known the Ten Commandments. And certainly we know the Ten Commandments, of which doesn't say, thou shalt not be angry. Because there is a good side to anger, but we know the Ten Commandments, and Jesus relates it here to the Ten Commandment of thou shalt not murder. Now, if you look at the Hebrew word for murder, it gives this idea of a criminal killing for personal reasons. Jesus starts off with the Ten Commandments, and he says, but I tell you. It's interesting, Jesus kind of puts that little pause there and he throws that clause in. And I think it's that he says, hey, I want you then to know that you all know the Ten Commandments that you shall not murder. But I tell you, I think Jesus is saying, hey, there's a new sheriff in town. Things are about to change. It's a new day. It's a new covenant. There's a new standard. The Ten Commandments, I think what Jesus is getting ready to tell them is, hey, I want you to know something. The Ten Commandments, you think they're hard. They're not. They're easy. I'm going to tell you something that's harder. Something that's harder than not murdering. Because I would venture to say there's probably not a murderer in this room. But Jesus said, hey, I'm going to give you a new standard. It's not about just murdering. It's about don't even be angry, because if you're angry, that's like murder. Hey, most of us would say, nope, never murdered anybody. That would not be the case. When Jesus raises to a new standard and says, let me give you a new set of rules, let me give you some new behaviors, and he says, hey, it's not murder. It's about anger. We're going to raise the bar here. Jesus says, but I tell you. He gives this idea that anger, the Greek word is that the idea of anger is that there's malice that is nursed inwardly. You see, a lot of times for anger, sometimes when we get angry, we boil over, but a lot of times we don't boil over, we just steam. And we try to manage it so that no one knows it. But the truth is it's something that happens in our life, and there's a malice, there's a frustration, there's an anger there, there's an irritation, and we just feed it, and we just think about it, and we just fuel it, and it steams on us. A couple of quotes that I read this week I thought were interesting. The old Roman philosopher Seneca, if some of you have ever read anything by Seneca or know who he is, he said, anger is brief insanity. Some of you understand what I'm talking about. My mother used to talk to me all the time when I was a kid about controlling my temper. But Seneca said, anger is brief insanity. Some of you will recognize the name Dr. Gary Smalley. Dr. Gary Smalley says that anger is a secondary emotion. Now stop and think about that a second. Anger is a secondary emotion. That means it's not the cause, it's the effect. The cause will be something like fear or frustration or maybe unresolved hurt. But you think about it, anger is always caused by something else. It's the effect. It's secondary. When we think about this idea that anger is subject to judgment, look at verse 22, the second part of it, and it says, and whoever says to his brother, fool, will be subject to the Sanhedrin, but whoever says you moron will be subject to hellfire. Not only is anger subject to judgment, but it's a subject to decision. You see, there's a progression with it. You get to decide. When we think about Cain's story, we know that Cain, the son of Adam and Eve, had a brother named Abel. And the scriptures tell us in Genesis chapter 4 that the Lord had regard for Abel's offering. That's the quote. That's what the scriptures say. That Cain and Abel brought offerings, and the Lord had regard for Abel's offering. And it said, but he did not have favor for Cain's offering. And the scriptures say that Cain was furious. And it goes on to say that sin is crouching at the door, and God says to him, you must learn to rule over it. That is the truth for us, that sin is crouching at the door when we're angry, and we must learn to rule over it, to make the decision, to make the right decisions. Warren Wiersbe says, angry feelings lead to angry words and angry deeds. My pastor growing up used to say this. I've quoted him before, and you've heard me say this before. He used to say, don't feel your way to an action, but act your way to a feeling. Now, some of you might think, now, what exactly does that mean? Don't feel your way to an action, but act your way to a feeling. Don't be driven by your emotions, because when you're driven by your emotions, a lot of times you'll make bad decisions. But act your way to a feeling. You know what? Sometimes when I wake up, this morning was one of those. Now, I've been excited to preach this sermon. I feel like it was a neat one that God gave me, and I've been looking forward to it. But I got to tell you, when my alarm, where really I woke up before my alarm this morning, and my first thought was not, woohoo, Sunday church at 9. But I wasn't driven by my emotions. I went ahead and took a shower and brushed my teeth and got my clothes on and came to church. You all know what I'm saying about act your way to a feeling. Sometimes you don't feel like coming to church either. But all of us, when we get here, when we leave, we're all glad we came. Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning. I don't know that I ever have been to church in my entire life, and more times than once, I thought, hey, I don't really feel like going today. But I don't get driven by my emotions. I do what's right, and I get up and I go. But I don't know that ever have I gotten up and gone that when it was over, I thought, I can't believe I went to that today. Every time I go, I feel better. I acted my way to a feeling. You laugh, and I see a bunch of you nodding your heads. You know what I'm saying. That's what I mean by don't feel your way to an action, but act your way to a feeling. In Cain's story, the problem was Cain. But in the story of Joseph, if you remember, Joseph was kind of the favorite of his father, and his father gave him his father just treated him different than all the rest of the boys and all the rest of his brothers. And so they eventually decided that they would sell him into slavery and tell their father that he got killed. And then he goes through all of the things with Potiphar and his wife, and he ends up in jail, and he has guys that he interprets their dreams, and those guys go get out and don't remember to tell the king, that the Pharaoh, that Joseph is in there unjustly, and it's a whole big story. And eventually there's a famine, and his family comes to him, because at this time he had gotten out of prison and was the second man in charge of the government, that he was taking care of all of the food because there was a famine. And so the other countries were coming to Egypt, and his brothers show up one day at his doorstep, and he recognizes his brothers, but they don't recognize him, and he has every chance to squash them. It's a great story. You should read it this afternoon if you're not familiar with that story. If you are familiar, you should go back and read it anyway. There will be some details you forgot. But Joseph manages it in, or Joshua manages it in such a way that's so important for us to see, and it's significant for us to understand that in his case, the problem, the catalyst, most of us would say was his brothers, but really it was his dad. Jacob really caused the problem for Joshua and his brothers, because he obviously favored one of the sons. Now certainly he would have some of the responsibility, because I'm sure he was a little braggadocious at times, showing off his fancy coat. And I'm sure his brothers were part of the problem, because they were the ones that sold him into slavery. And so it's interesting when you see that it's interesting when you see that how God works in his life, but he handled things in the right way, even though he wasn't really the one at fault. Then you look at Jesus' story. The cause in Jesus' story was everybody but him. It's us. It's the world. Remember, Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. There's a definite progression to anger, and we get to see it in the second part of verse 22. when he says, anyone who says to his brother, fool, will be subject to the Sanhedrin, but whoever says you, moron, will be subject to hellfire. It's interesting, but the word fool there is translated from the Greek as raka. It means someone who's ignorant, someone who doesn't make good decisions, someone who's not knowledgeable. They have, it's a description of their actions and their behaviors. The second one, when it says, but whoever says you moron, that's the Greek word moros. You would understand why we would get the translation moron from it. But that's not somebody who has intellectual or knowledge problems, bad actions and behaviors. That's somebody who has bad morals, somebody who has bad character and bad reputation. And it gives us the idea that you can progress from this one to this one. You shouldn't say this, but you definitely should not say this. This one is bad, but this one is worse. And there's a progression to anger in the decisions and in the way things happen. It says, if you say raka, if you say fool, you'll be subject to the Sanhedrin. That was like their religious Supreme Court. But it says, if you say moros, if you appeal to their character, if you judge their character and you judge their reputation, that then you will be subject, what does it say? To hellfire. Some of your translations will probably say Gehenna. That was the trash dump outside of Jerusalem, where they burned everything. It's interesting for us to see how that works and how those two make a progression. Something that's interesting, 15 different times in the Scriptures, 15 different times in the Scriptures, there is a sentence, a verse that will include anger and include fire. It will include anger and it will include fire. Now, here's what I know. Is there a good side of anger? Yeah. Is there a good side of fire? Sure, you can cook with it. You can heat with it. It purifies things. But there also is a side of fire that's disaster. It's tragic. And anger's the same way. It's interesting that 15 times the Scriptures talk about fire and the Scriptures talk about anger in the same verse, in the same thought. It kind of gives us that idea in the things that we do. Next, if we look at verses 23 and 24, anger between brothers. Look what it says in verse 23 and 24. Says, so if you are offering your gift on the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled with your brother, and then come and offer your gift. There's an anger that's between brothers. Brothers are people who have the same dad, right? Everybody with me? Okay? Brothers are people that have the same dad. That would be us, right? Our father. That's talking about us. There's an anger that's between brothers or between brothers and sisters. I think the significance of that is, hey, there are things that my brother and sister did to me that when I was a kid, that it's a wonder we're friends today. Just like your brothers and sisters. Just like you did to your brothers and sisters. I didn't do that to mine. I was pretty much angelic to them most of the time, as I remember. But it's a wonder that any of us are friends with our brothers and sisters when we get to be adults, isn't it? Brandon, you're smiling bigger than Wynn is. It makes sense to you, doesn't it? Okay, I'm with you. But it says among brothers. That's why that's so important. You see, there's something different for us when we have the same father. It says that if you're going to offer your offering between brothers, if you're going to give your gift, if you're going to make a sacrifice to make atonement with God, and in the process of that, you decide that you're going to do something, you should leave if you realize that there's a problem with a brother. Sister, you should go take care of that before you try to get right with God, because the truth is, no matter how great your sacrifice is, you cannot be right with God if you're not right with your brothers and sisters. So it says, leave at once. When internal sin is present, outward worship is hindered. Reconciliation must precede worship and relationship. We have to manage these horizontal relationships before we can manage the vertical relationship with God the Father. It just works that way. It's interesting that Jesus relates anger and hatred to murder. And then in the very next set of verses, he ups them again when we say about, hey, you thought the Ten Commandments were tough. Really, the Ten Commandments were easy. Anger, I'm going to relate to murder. And lust, I'm going to relate to adultery. It's not that you commit it that you're guilty. It's just if you think it, you're guilty. Jesus says, hey, it's a new standard. It's a new day. To have integrity in worship, animosity cannot be present between brothers and sisters. The time for reconciliation with brothers is always now. The time for reconciliation between sisters is always now. William H. Walton said this, I thought it was a great quote. He said, to carry a grudge is like being stung to death by one bee. Carrying a grudge is like being stung to death by one bee. Look at verses 25 and 26. It says, reach a settlement quickly with your adversary while you're on the way with him, or your adversary will hand you over to the judge and the judge to the officer, and you'll be thrown into prison. And I assure you, you will never get out of there until you have paid the last debt. Until you have paid your dues, you'll not get out of that debt prison. You know, the fact of the matter is being indebted to people sometimes doesn't have anything to do with money. Not only when we think of anger, is there anger between brothers, but the scriptures tell us that there's anger among adversaries. In this day and time, when in the first century, if you had a problem with somebody, if they had done something that wronged you, you had the right, as they were your adversary, you had the right to kind of go make a citizen's arrest, if you will. You could haul them before the judge and explain what had happened, and the judge could make a ruling. And it says that with your adversary, you should quickly make peace before you go to the judge. You know why? Because once you took your adversary under citizen's arrest and you took them before the judge, whatever the judge decided, that was the rule, whether you like it or not. Once the judge got involved, it was back again like your brothers and sisters. Do you remember when you got old enough as brothers and sisters to learn to handle things yourself? Oh, it was so much better. Because I'm telling you, when mom and dad get involved, it just changes everything. You see, it didn't really matter whether I was the one mad or whether my brother was the one mad. Once we got mom involved, it didn't really matter who was mad. Whatever mom said was the way things were going to be. And that's what the scriptures are telling us here. Their scriptures are saying, with your adversary. Now, remember, we're talking about our adversaries. We're not talking about our brothers and sisters. We've already talked about our brothers and sisters. We need to handle that now. Remember what it said? First, leave your offering and go deal with your brother and your sister. But when it says your adversary, look what it says. It says, reach a settlement quickly. That means with us, it's different than it is with our adversaries. But it still says that we should do it quickly. The time for reconciliation with an adversary is quickly, but the time for reconciliation with a brother or a sister, those who have the same father, is now. Once the judge is involved, his rule is the rule. Now, some of you might sit back and go, well, we're not going to take adversaries before the judge. We don't really do citizen's arrest. But what about the court of public opinion? The truth is, we all live in front of the court of public opinion, don't we? We all have a tendency, maybe not to drag people before the judge, but we do have a tendency to drag people out into the court of public opinion. We all have a tendency, when we get frustrated with others, to involve others. Very few of us keep it to ourselves. The sad part is, as humans, we have a tendency, when we get frustrated with someone else, the first thing we want to do is start building a team to support our side. Is that true? All of a sudden, y'all have gone to sleep on me. It's got quiet in here. Hey, you know what? That is true, because this is a small town. See, everybody knows everybody to some extent. It was funny, I heard people talking just yesterday about some new friends they had met working at the concession stand. And the reason they didn't know each other is because one of them sits on this side of the sanctuary and one of them sits on this side of the sanctuary. But we all kind of know that idea of the small town feeling that even if we don't know everybody, we know somebody who knows you. And if somebody who knows you is mad at you, we certainly know that because that word gets around pretty fast because everybody goes to building teams. Can I tell you something? That's not small town operation. That's human operation. I've lived in towns that were 25 times as big as this town. It's the same way there. Everybody knows who's mad at everybody. Everybody knows who's frustrated with somebody else because they said this or did this or because their kids are sideways or whatever the case may be. That's not small town stuff. That's people stuff. And it says with our adversaries that we should handle it quickly. Romans 8, if you want to flip over there, Romans 12, I mean, if you want to flip over there, many of us know this verse. It says, if possible, on your part, live at peace with everyone. You know what that means? That means, if possible, you should do your dead level best to live at peace with everybody. You know what else that means? That means that there are some people, it's just not possible. But you got to make sure you're not the one in the wrong. You're doing your best to live at peace, whether they're doing their best to live at peace or not. Many of us know that verse, but look at the verses that follow it. It says, friends, do not avenge yourselves. Instead, leave room for His wrath. You know what that means? That means let God take care of the problem. You just keep being a person of peace. God will take care of it. If it gets bad enough, it needs to be dealt with. God will deal with it in His infinite wisdom and with His infinite power. You don't have to deal with it. I don't have to deal with it. I just got to be a person of peace as best I can. For it is written, vengeance belongs to me. I will repay, says the Lord. But, look at that. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If your enemy is thirsty, give him something to drink. For in doing so, you will be heaping fiery coals on his head. Do not be conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good. Did any of your moms used to tell you, kill them with kindness? Anybody's mom used to say that? I thought only my mom said that. Isn't it amazing how smart moms are? But that whole kill them with kindness, no matter what, just be kind. No matter how much frustration they cause in your life, just be a person of peace. Remember, with our brothers and sisters, it says handle it now. And with those who are not our brothers and sisters, the adversaries, it says handle it quickly. But you handle it. Don't take it to the court of public opinion. It's not for you to start building a team. Lastly, anger is a factor in righteousness. You see, Jesus relates murder not to killing, but He relates it to anger. We talked about just a minute ago in verses 27 through 30, He relates lust, just the thinking the thoughts that we shouldn't, to adultery. But what He really wants us and what Jesus really wants the people that He's preaching to on the Sermon on the Mount to see is He really wants us to understand how lousy our self-righteousness is. You think you're good because you don't murder anybody, and I want you to know murder's not the issue, anger is. You think you're good because you haven't committed adultery with anybody, but really adultery's not the issue, it's your thoughts. So just because you haven't committed murder and just because you haven't committed adultery, don't get too self-righteous. I think that's the message Jesus has given to the people. Now, why would Jesus give that message to the people? It's because when our self-righteousness is shattered, when our self-righteousness goes to pieces, all we have to depend on is Jesus' righteousness. That's important. Because the only righteousness that God accepts is Jesus' righteousness. You see, no matter how good I am, no matter how many positive things I do, no matter how obedient I am to the teachings and the principles of Christ, the bottom line is I'm still a sinner. It's not my righteousness. It's His righteousness. And the righteousness that God accepts is Jesus' righteousness. And Jesus is saying to those people and to us, I want you to understand something. You're not as righteous as you think. Just because you haven't murdered and because you haven't committed adultery, let me ask you a question. How are you doing with your anger? How are you doing with your thoughts? And when He breaks us down, then we understand how significant His righteousness is to us. James 1:19 has become one, and 20 has become one of my favorite verses. My dearly loved brothers, others understand this. Everyone must be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For man's anger does not bring about, accomplish God's righteousness. I think about that. Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger. I'm like the total opposite of that. I'm slow to listen, quick to speak, and quick to anger. That's how I'm wired. But I got to understand it's not my righteousness. It's His righteousness. But He does expect me to be more like Him. And He is quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. But when I'll do that, it does bring about God's righteousness. I want you to see this. Listen to this. Anger is often a result of our brokenness as opposed to the wrongs of others. Oftentimes, anger is rooted in our own insecurities and pride rather than injustice. I want you to see that. Anger is often a result of our brokenness as opposed to the wrongs of others. Oftentimes, anger is rooted in our own insecurities and pride rather than injustice. We would like to think what drives our anger is injustice. But the truth is, what drives most of our anger is our insecurity and our pride. I want you to know this. Anger is like a fire. It gets progressively worse. It is to be confessed. And for us, we have to decide. When we look at the story of Cain, it was totally his fault. When we look at the story of Joseph, it was partially his fault. But when we look at the story of Jesus, it was totally everybody else's fault. So when it comes to anger, obviously, we would all rather be like Jesus than we would to be like Joseph or to be like Cain. So I would ask you this question. The next time that you allow your insecurity or your pride to get the best of you, you going to be like Cain? You going to be like Joseph? Or you going to be like Jesus? What would Jesus do? That's the question that we got to ask ourselves. How would Jesus handle this? How would Jesus handle the situation you're in? For some of you, it's present right now. For some of you, it was yesterday, and you're still stewing. For some of you, it was 20 years ago, and you're still stewing. And for some of you, it's going to be tomorrow. The key is, what would Jesus do? It wasn't His fault at all. And He said, Father, forgive them. Forgiveness and love are the cure for insecurity and pride. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for the lesson that we get in the Scriptures about anger. I thank you that you taught it to the people in the Sermon on the Mount, and I thank you that you teach it to us today. I just pray that you would help us to be people who don't hold grudges and who don't let anger get the best of us with our brothers and with our sisters. But Lord, I pray that you would also help us to handle our anger as it relates to our adversaries, those that are not our brothers and sisters, and that we would make peace with them quickly and as best we can live at peace with all men. Lord, I pray that would be the case for us. And I pray these things in Jesus' name.